This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Extraordinary Endeavor. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and on this series, we've partnered with Endeavor, an organization that has done an amazing work to help you, the entrepreneurs. Endeavor is a global entrepreneur support organization that focuses on selecting and helping high-impact entrepreneurs from around the world to scale their businesses. They've been established for more than 23 years globally and played a pivotal role in growing many of the Endeavor entrepreneurs' companies from their initial scale-up phase to a large conglomerate. Several of these companies have gone on to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange, so we're delighted that Endeavor Malaysia, the local chapter of the organization, partnered with us for this series. Each week, we feature one mentor from their program to answer real questions from entrepreneurs. This week, our mentor is Chen Chao Yeo, or better known as CC, the co-founder of Fave.
Hi, BFM listeners. I'm Chen Chao, just call me CC, co-founder of Fave Group. So Fave is a merchant digital platform. So I think what we do is basically we help offline local businesses to digitize. So basically helping them to grow their business, to cut their costs, increase efficiency, basically doing all every aspects, whether in terms of facilitating payments, to driving new customer, retention, upsell, cross-sell, analytics, customer rating reviews, financing, and a bunch of operation stuff as well, like getting digitized your menu, bringing takeaways and everything.
Our first question today comes from Nadir Ashafiq, the co-founder and managing director of The Lorry. And his question is about looking ahead when setting goals for the next quarter, especially as Q1 was a little bit rough for some. Here's what he asked.
Hi, Chen Chao. My name is Nadir Ashafiq, co-founder and executive director of The Lorry, a digital logistics platform based in Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, and Singapore. So my question is, you know, as companies enter quarter two of 2020, how should we ensure that things go according to the plan that was set? Is there a need to restructure if the targets are not matched? More so now that we have a COVID-19 situation, which is very uncertain for business as well as the economy as a whole.
Yeah, Nadir, thanks for the questions. I think as we all know, today this Q1 has been pretty, I won't call it exciting, but it's been pretty challenging, right? So I think with the coronavirus happening, Malaysia, we have all the political change and everything. So I think depends on the business model that each business are at. There'll be businesses that could be scaling up, there could be challenges, right? So I think like if you go on a positive note, there are a bunch of business models that have grown, like gaming, like food delivery, collaboration tools, healthcare, and a bunch of those stuff. And there are also definitely a bunch of businesses that got affected, right? So let's say people are going out less, people are hanging out not in a big group. So I think a lot of those things got affected, travel industry definitely, activities and all those things. So I think like in The Lorry, in terms of logistics, right? So I think there'll be different trends as we look at these things. So if you look at it, like let's say, do people still need to eat? I think people still need to eat. So I think people still need the shipments across. Do people need certain more supplies? Let's say now today, actually there'll be increase of needs of, let's say, masks, sanitizer and all those kind of things. So those shipments likelihood will increase. But there is also things that are made in China, right? Whether from the raw material to the input materials supply chain. As the factories got closed in January, February, a lot of raw materials are now not coming into the country, which means that a lot of factories and whatnot don't have the raw material. And I think that will reduce the supply. So I think that's sort of the high level thinking. But I think if we look at it in terms of like, let's say, I think for one on this would be looking objectively and look maybe even constructively but critically into the business, right? How are we trending according to Q1 plan, right? And I think a lot of time whether, and it's not just at whether we are hitting or not hitting, but which aspects is doing well and which aspects is not doing well. Which aspects we started seeing some upturn, right? So let's say in terms of consumer trend, like as the news of first few cases of coronavirus, people get panicked, people reduce. But I think after a while, we actually see that some segments of society or market, people actually go back up again. So I think a lot of it is looking at all the input metrics, leading indicators, and seeing which aspects would have a start turning. And I think we want to make sure that as the market turn, we are ready for that. And I think a lot of it also is, at this period of time, it's not about hard selling. So if people are not going to travel, telling people that say go travel every day would not assure people, right? People care about their safety, security, especially if they have the older people or younger people at home. So I think a lot of it is looking at it and see what can we do. And I think also if we are behind the plan in terms of top line, right, then we'll look back and to say, is there certain aspects in the cost that we should look at? Should we optimize certain costs? Which of the costs can be optimized? And I think a lot of times during this time, where everyone starts spending less, whether for marketing, whether on, let's say, hiring and everything, actually at this point, opportunities is also there if you have the cash flow to do that, right? Today, as businesses that who runs all the advertising billboards online and everything, as they have less clients, they'll be more willing to cut the price. If you have the capability today to do that, it's a good time to lock in pricing, right? Talents as well. Not many companies are hiring today, which means that it's also an opportunity to get top A-plus talents at the right price, right salary, right? So I think every challenge has opportunity. So I think is how do we leverage on that? And I think the targets is how do we make sure that the target is still realistic? And I think in the end, a target is stretch but realistic. The team need to feel that they can achieve that target. If the team feel that this target is way beyond, people will feel that this target is no longer relevant and I don't care. So I think we want to make sure that the team is still pumped up. And I think that as we look at that, it will be which of the targets make sense? Which of the targets need to be adapted? And if you say adapted, how would it affect cash flow? Because as a startup or as entrepreneurs, the most important thing is survivability of the company. The day when the company could not meet cash flow, that's the day that a lot of aspects will come. So I think thinking of cash flow cost aspects as well, I think it's looking at how do we conserve cash and how do we bring in cash flow. So let's say example, that let's say you run a consumer platform where customer pay through payment gateway. Could you get better payment terms from the payment gateway? Let's say previously payment gateway pays you after 3 days. Could you negotiate that to pay you on after 2 days or 1 day? Maybe with a small fee, but if that's what you need to survive through, maybe that's what you need to do. Any of the costs that today we have been doing good time that we've been spending that doesn't make sense to spend? What can we optimize, right? And I think which of those things that it just became the norm. So I think is one of the things that to look at from budget will be zero rise the budget and start replan with that new budget. Because a lot of time when we plan budget is that we look at last month, how much we spent. We spend this 10,000. This month we continue 10,000 or up a bit or reduce a bit. But instead of saying the budget last month was 10,000, is we say now we have any amount to spend. This month at this situation, how much should we spend? And I think that structure will help us to think through.
I love how CC understood that everyone got affected with what's going on at the moment, but looking at it from an opportunity window, turning these challenges businesses have at the moment and asking yourself what you can do and how you can play a role in helping others and ensure that the targets are still relevant with the input of your employees as well. Nadir's second question was a follow-up to that, building a strategy, the roadblocks and implementation. Here's the question.
So what do you think are the biggest roadblocks when it comes to planning and implementing a strategy?
Okay, Nadir, thanks for the second questions. So I think first is that I think after we build our strategy, right, we have a vision, the strategy, where we want to get towards. I think the key, number one of it is that how do we ensure that buy-in? So a strategy means nothing if our team, our stakeholders do not believe in it. So I think a strategy will be, I think first would be, how do you ensure that all the relevant stakeholders, from our board to our shareholders, to our leadership team, to our employees, right, managers, and also the junior staff, do they believe in this strategy? Do they understand why we employ this strategy? Right, because a lot of times when we have a strategy, it doesn't get executed, not because that we do not talk much about it. We can talk about it every day. But if people don't believe that this is the right thing to do, or they don't know why we should do this. Because a lot of times, personally, I've faced that multiple times as well. Right? There are sometimes that after I explain, spend the time sitting down with the team, explain why we do certain decision, and share with them my thinking thoughts, the logic behind why we come to this conclusion, open up the data, showing them the data points and say, this is how we look at, this is the trends have been like this, and hence we need to do this decision. And after the team understand, actually the team said, oh yeah, okay, now I know why we do this, and hence now I feel motivated to do it. I think a lot of Gen Y or millennials today, a lot of them is that they have a lot of mission-minded, right? So today, do they see, do they think that we are acting upon the right thing? So even in this challenging time, let's say, take with the virus, our teams are observing us, whether we're doing a certain action or not doing a certain action. So sometimes we don't do something, it's also a signal to the team. Maybe the team may think that we don't care, even though behind the scene, we may be doing something. We may be planning for something. So it's how do we let people know? What are we thinking? How do we do it? So I think for me, in terms of strategy, building on it, I think the first one is buy-in. Wholesome buy-in across. And everyone knows where are we heading. And also, besides where are we heading is what are we aiming to achieve? So let's say in a longer term or short term, in 1 year, 3 months, 1 month, or maybe even 1 week, what is success means to for that strategy? What's a big picture vision they want to hit? And what's a milestone, right, towards that? There's a team, let's say we tell the team that today our revenue is doing 1 million. We tell the team we want to hit 1 billion. Our team, many people may not be able to imagine how to take a business from 1 million to $1 billion. Right? They were like, okay, these people are crazy. The leadership don't even think about it. Just throw a random number. But let's say if you can be able to show them that now at 1 million, this is maybe 1,000 trucks. So every truck bring $1,000. So how many trucks are there in the market? With these things in this market, we can move from 1 million to 50 million. And these are the other markets that we can go for. And then stress test that, work top down and bottoms up and see whether that 1 billion makes sense. Maybe through some projections and through some seeing, okay, maybe 250 million is the right goal in the 3 years or 5 years. And after that, once the team see that that makes sense, they'll be like, okay, I know what to do. So for each thing, at this point, how do I get more trucks for this? If we have more trucks, how do I get more cities? What to replicate? What to scale? What to optimize? So let's say example, maybe I put an example sometimes. I think especially maybe it's when we're shifting strategy, right? So let's say in the good times, we tell the team that we are growing growth at all costs or growth at a significant cost. But in a tougher time, sometimes we may be going to the team and say, now we are going to optimize on profitability. In our mind, we changed, we shifted. But maybe we have been telling their old strategy to the team for the last 1 year, 2 years. Our team have heard that 20 times, 50 times. And our commission scheme, our process, our many things, reports, everything were optimized to that. Today, as we change, maybe as a leader, we may be seeing some trend and hence we are shifting. But the team may not have fully captured on to that. They may still be like, okay, yeah, this thing is there, but I don't know what to do. How do I change? I'm still being commissioned by this. I'm still getting these things, right? My process is still that. So how do we get people to shift, to implement that? It's also, besides buying in, is building the process, tools, and the wholesome to make sure that every aspect that affect the decision-making is that. So I think a lot of it, as you rolled out the strategy, is that how, when we are not there, when a leader, a founder, a CEO is not there, how would our team decide to make a decision on any day-to-day? Right, when they treat a merchant, customer, vendor, or another teammates, what are the thinking process that they would do? And I think that one is key to enable that. Because a vision means nothing if the team don't believe in it and the team doesn't know how to execute it. So I will look at it, these two are actually the biggest stumbling block in terms of planning and implementing strategy.
Brilliant. A strategy means nothing without the buy-in from all stakeholders. Ask yourself, do people believe in your current strategy? Have you sat down to explain the logic behind it and why did you came up with that decision? Spend time and enlighten your team and ensure that you get the buy-in. Only then, implementation can be done. We'll take a short break, but when we come back, we have a question on balancing the short-term and long-term priorities and how to monitor progress of such strategies. Stay tuned. You're listening to Extraordinary Endeavour on BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Extraordinary Endeavour. A show where entrepreneurs ask questions to mentors on everything about running a business. Thanks to our partner for this show, Endeavour Malaysia. So, let's continue. Nadir's final question was on how to balance the short-term and long-term priorities. Let's have a listen.
So, my last question is, you know, when you develop and implement strategy, you know, how should we effectively balance, priorities between, you know, the short and the longer term? So how do we effectively balance these two?
Okay, Nadir, yeah. So thanks a lot for the question, right? And I think that great day. I think looking at what Delori has been doing for the last few years, I think we have seen a lot of things that you crack through with big MNCs. There's a lot of long-term that you work through 1 year, 2 years before you achieve that. And I think that day-to-day, driving through multiple countries, getting through the attractions, right? So I think when we look at this, how do we effectively balance short and long-term priorities? So I think we should always have a long in mind, but we need to also ensure that short-term is not compromised. So let's say in this time, let's say running a business, when economy, stock markets, everything is on a turn, and when there's a lot of flux and changes, I think the first one is survivability of the company. When the company ran out of cash completely, that's the day that we don't survive, right? So I think as we balance on that, I think is one is the basic necessities, which means that we can pay employee, we can pay the vendor, we can pay supplier or whoever it is. So all the payments, we have enough. So I think that will be the core zero, right? That's need to be there. Because if it's not there, the team would get rattled, affected, and even though they may not say anything, in their mind they'll be like worried. And I think that will not be helpful. So I think that will be to me the short term immediate, right? Urgent and immediate to make sure. If that is not a concern, then that's great. Then I think is a lot of time when we look at long term, there's a great vision. And we want the long term priorities, we want to get towards that, the true north, right? So I think as we go on that, is that towards the directions, what is the short term and mid term towards that? What's the milestone? So let's say we want to dominate the entire last mile logistics in Southeast Asia or Asia. So right now, you know, that's long term. So then we pull back down into medium term. Which country? Which part of the last mile? Or which part of logistics that we want to take care of, right? That will be mid term. And then I think you take it to the short term is that wherever that we look at it, that we need to be done. And I think a lot of it is we reflect, when you say long term, I think one way to think of it is that for long term, we can look at last 5 years and next 5 years. And then you pull back, it could be forward 6 months and last 6 months. And the last one, it could be forward 6 weeks or forward 4 weeks and last 4 weeks, right? So I think a lot of it is look at front and back. And I think a lot of times we underestimate what we can achieve in longer term. We overestimate what we can achieve in short term. A lot of times we think that we can do a lot in 1 day, 1 week, right? But I think it is a lot of time is knowing that each action builds up. A lot of times, like let's say when we drive the team towards a longer term priorities, the day-to-day momentum only happen after a week, a month, 3 months, 6 months, when the team and all the other stakeholders get involved. So let's say example that when after for Faith, we acquired Groupon, subsidiaries in Southeast Asia. So after the acquisitions, a lot of people at that time were still thinking us as a deal site. And to move that from a deal site into where we are today, to how do we get everyone to shift that mindset? It takes time. And it takes time from the employees to the merchants to the consumers and eventually to the investors and other stakeholders. So how do we be able to continuously focusing on the longer run and have many milestones to achieve that? So I think that will be where I see. So I think that, and the balancing a lot of it is that when we say balancing as a whole company, as a founder, entrepreneur, we will see all the short, longer terms. But for different people in the team, maybe as an executor, person A may be only focusing on executing for today. Understand the big picture, but they're focusing on this. And maybe you have a few people that planning for longer term. So I think in the end is how do the entire company, 100 people, 50 people, 200 people, cascade all their priorities, align, you add all those things up, it tie back to the overall that we are looking at. So I think that will be key, right? Because not everyone will be able to be as strategic as you are. And not everyone will be as tactical. So I think it's people need to be clear, knowing what they do that bring immediate impact and what they do over time. It cascades to a bigger vision.
I love how CC's advice on how you must have a long-term vision, but then pulling it back to see how your medium-term strategy can help that, and pulling it even further to see how your short-term strategy can assist. Knowing how all these can actually just keep your momentum going and ensuring that your long-term vision is still achievable. Let's move on as we have another entrepreneur asking CC some questions. This is Azarol Faizi, the co-founder and CEO of BatteryCoup.com, asking on how to stay on top of things after setting a strategy. Here's Azarol with his question.
Hi, I'm Azarol Faizi, the founder of BatteryCoup.com. I started off a brick and mortar automotive battery company way back in 2006, serving OEM and B2B customers. Subsequently, and after 10 years, I decided to disrupt automotive battery market via BatteryCoup. The resources, expertise and networking were in place, and I took the leap of faith to dive into B2C while maintaining my B2B front. For 5 challenging years, I've been putting my effort and commitment to groom my team in order to evolve BatteryCoup even further. Fast forward today, we shall reach the 500,000 milestones of customers served within this year. And we are currently evolving from a battery vertical into a full-scale roadside assistance horizontal. This will become our biggest evolution to date, transforming a brick and mortar business into a digital platform and marketplace. I name this next evolution B Plus or BatteryCoup Plus, a game-changing digital marketplace where we aim to redefine roadside assistance industry in Southeast Asia. I have 2 questions for Chen Chow. Number one, how do we ensure we are constantly on top of things after setting up a strategy?
Great to hear the question from Azarol. So I think a lot of times after we set a strategy, a lot of times when we went on a weeks of planning, right? 1 year planning, 1 quarter planning, or even 5 year planning. And a lot of times as those go in and we start getting it into shape and started cascading to the team. As we do that, I think a lot of times we may, for the last couple of weeks, we may be not spending enough time on day to day. And things start coming in, right? The team started saying, okay, this issue, that issue. And then a lot of times is then we got sucked back into the day-to-day and say, fixing this customer experience, merchant issues, this staff problem, this all kind of problems that's coming in. And I think is, how do we ensure that the big picture things that we are talking about are still being driven, at the same time, not causing all this day-to-day that is going to drag out all our focus, right? Because imagine that we talk about all those and then the next 1-2 weeks, we end up spending all our time solving the little nitty-gritty things that is urgent, but may not be as important for the longer run. But if you let it brew around, how it may affect. So I think the key is, as a leader or as a founder, entrepreneur, I think it's key to ensure that, I think both longer-term, mid-term, short-term, urgent and important things need to be solved. But I think the key will be who need to look at what problem. Who need to be entrusted to solve the day-to-day? Which of the day-to-day things can be handled without your involvement? Which of those you may be just giving some guidance? Which of those you need to be hands-on? Right? I think it's knowing that aspects. And I think the same thing with the bigger parts. How do you ensure that the message goes across? How do you ensure that people actually look incorporating it into their quarterly plan? How do you ensure that people actually believe in it and executing it? So I think that sort of balance to drive that. And I think constantly on top of things, there are many things. And I think a lot of times is to ensure that we prioritize our time, because our time is very crucial. If we can't prioritize our time, we can't expect our team to prioritize their time. So I think one of the things that I do each day is that every day on my way to office, I actually going to, in my mind while driving, projecting my day. And say, hey, today, if I can only do one thing today, what is that one thing that I should achieve? What's the second thing I should achieve today? Third thing. And doing that helped me to think that concept and saying that, would I prioritize the right thing or not? right? Because there are many things, but a lot of time, Pareto effect as well. 20% of things that you do, likely have 80-90% of effects. So are you doing the right things and not just doing things right? And I think the second is the way I look at it is every day on my way back home, one of the things I do is I reflect back my whole day today. Who did I meet? Who did I talk to? Which meeting I'm in? Which are the key decisions I made? And look back at each of those things and reflect and say, hey, today, if for every conversation I have, for every meeting, as I walk out of the meeting, and the team walk out of the meeting, do they feel more aligned of the directions? Are they clear of what we need to do? Have their problems been solved? Do they walk out feeling a bit more inspired or not? Right? So if each of those things, every meeting, if we can achieve some of those or all of those, then people will be able to move forward. If people come in with a problem to solve and we end that meeting where they walk out, whether they tell us or not, they walk out with more problems, more worry, then we fail in that. So I think it's how do we ensuring all those things, right, to drive that. So that, because in the end, it's not solving many things. As a leader of the company, our goal is not saying that we do 50 things. We can do 50 things and the business tank. Or we could do 2 amazingly right things very well. And that bring the business to the next level. And I think one other practice that I do on a weekly basis is reflect back on the whole week. What are the key things that I've been doing? And sort by 2 things. One is by percentage of time. So task A, task B, task C, task D. How many percent this week I spent on those things? And the next column of it, what I did was how much I think those aspects bring impact to the business. Of course, some of this is subjective because there's almost no way to quantify exactly this is 25% impact. But just by doing that, everyone will be able to look at it and say which things I should do more and which things I should do less. Things that spend less time bring bigger impact. How can I do more of this? Things that spend a lot of time, less impact. How should I cut down? And I think some of these things that I just mentioned, these few aspects, right? Early morning practice before I go to work, evening everyday reflection, and a weekend reflection on how I spend my time. So for a lot of teams that I spend time with, share this with them. And I think in the end is how do we ensure that help the people to make better decisions? Because in the end, it's not about any of us. As a people running, managing 50 people, 100 people, 300 people, 500 people, how do you ensure the team make better decisions? So in the end, our goal is not that we are always on top of things, but those key things are being taken care of by the company.
The key message here is on how you as a leader can maybe delegate some of the issues that can help balance the day-to-day challenges and the long-term vision. Prioritizing our time first is important and it helps to set a standard. It's a really good message even if you remove the business context. Azarol also asked CC about things like culture and rhythms and why are these so crucial to scale?
Number 2, how important are meetings, culture of openness, management of site and retreat? Why are these things crucial in helping us to scale up?
So Azarol, thanks for the question. Why are these things crucial to scale? And I would say that it really depends on the leadership. What do you really believe in? What is your style? Right? So let's say you take our meeting rhythms. And I've seen different kind of leaders. And what I'm talking about are great leaders, right? So there are great leaders that are operating very well on schedule rhythms. I've also seen a lot of great leaders that operate not on rhythms, but based on how things, where should we prioritize and how do we solve problems. So maybe let me take an example, right? So there are 2 ways to run a meeting. One is that every meeting is run optimized by time. So each meeting is 1 hour. We end the meeting in 1 hour, whether we achieve the goal, not achieve the goal, but we optimize by time. So it's 1 hour. We prioritize based on that. The other school of thought that I've seen is that where we will spend time, if this is super important problem to solve, we don't limit by 1 hour. If that requires us to spend 4 hours, we spend 4 hours to solve that. And at the expense of maybe affecting other meetings or other things. And there's no right or wrong in the end, right? I think in the end is, what's the style that you believe in? That's part one. But the more importantly is the style that the team, your leadership team, your management, and the rest of the team can relate to and believe in and supportive. Because in the end, whichever style you do, you could have an impact to other people. So the key, right, the way I see it is, choose a way that you're most comfortable with and your leadership team most comfortable with, and share it across to the team and explain, this is how we're going to do because this is the reason, and get people buy in and execute it in that manner. Because when things become very random, then people doesn't know why they should this thing happen. They don't know how to operate. If people know that this is how you prioritize and this is how you're going to structure, people will adapt to it, right? And I think that will be how we look at it. Culture and openness. I think it's the same thing, right? So I think in the end is, if you look at it, how much should you be transparent? If let's say the company cash flow now is limited, you have very little money, enough money, who should you be transparent to? Of course, to your investors should be transparent. To your management, up to how many people should be transparent? Is it all? Is it some? And there's no perfect answer. And a lot of it is, by telling or not telling, it could affect people, whether we like it or not. We could be super transparent and make a lot of people worried, or we could be super transparent and allay every fear, or vice versa. And a lot of it is depending on how we communicate. And in the end, it's not about what we communicate or how we communicate even, it's how that communication was felt and by the other parties. So we can talk to the, let's say, rest of management or even rest of the team. If they walk out from there, felt more worried, then maybe that's a problem. Maybe sometimes we'll be transparent. They walk out from there, they feel very pumped up and say, hey, I'm jointly missioned to solve this together. Then it's great. Or after you shared with them, they don't know what to do next. It's like, oh, I'm lost, confused. And that's worse. So I think in the end is judge the situations and choose a way and be consistent to it. Which way you want to do it. And as you go on it, today, I think with all the work, the technology and everything, telling one group a certain thing, telling another group a different thing, likelihood of it, the story came out, is actually quite high. So be consistent. I think that would be the key one. If you think that you are not comfortable to share all the details, don't share. Because if you share and then make you worried, make your team worried, may as well don't share. But work towards it, right? And allay their fear. Our management retreats and offsites. I think in the end, it's not about doing or not do. The key is about what's the objective of that. So maybe we'll share about for Faith, right? What do we do? So we did a Faith Growth Summit in January. We flew in about 350 people from across the regions in early January in Port Dickson from all the offices. Some of our employees from Indonesia made their first passport, first flight of their life to go there. So I think in the key is that we ask ourselves, what's the goal? So we started the session. We're actually showing a 5-minute recordings where Joel, myself, and a few key leaders, we actually quietly went to the home of some of our employees and interviewed their parents, siblings, or children, talking about them, right? So we asked their parents what they hope for their son or daughter. And I think a lot of those things, what's the objective for that is, we tell the message at the end of that video where we show the team is that spend time with those that matter most. It's a messaging to the team. In the end, it's not a PR exercise, but it's to the team. The team need to feel that we care about them. And I think the second part as we go on that offsite is we want to tell people the state of business, the past and the future. And what is the innovation going to do? What's the shift of direction and what to go do on it? Right. So a lot of it, what we do at the retreats, how long, what kind of message or the things, it needs to be tied to it. Couple years ago, 3 years ago, after we acquired all the Groupons and after we integrate in, that time, everyone was like, when they go on Facebook, everyone was saying congratulations to our team and everything. And what we felt was the team at that time felt a bit more lax. People feel every on a high in the sky. So the objective of that retreat was actually we need to bring everyone back to the ground zero so that people will fight again. So that was that objective. And I think we plan in a way where we actually shared a lot more problems, what are the challenges and problems, and get rally the team to come together and say, let's solve problems. We are not there. But there are situations where we want to build a team morale where we need to be more positive. So I think a lot of it, when we do each of this, is think back. What do you want the people that, after they go through that, what do you want them to take away? And with that, plan out the objective driven, not just like, okay, let's spend time there. But the objective is super key. And every single detail is spent time on so that people would actually bring out the impact based on that.
I like how CC gave the meetings example. You can either have a very strict 1 hour meeting and no longer, and no matter what the output is, or a meeting that ends only when there is a solution, and it's how you find what works best for you and your team and the situation. Again, it goes back to the buy-in of your team and all stakeholders, and also the length that he took to touch the hearts of the employees, to show what they truly believe in. I absolutely love it. Stick around, because when we come back, I have a question for CC after listening to all this advice. You're listening to Extraordinary Endeavor right here on BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is Extraordinary Endeavor. My name is Jeff Sandu, and in the last half hour or so, our mentor for today, Chen Chaoyo, or better known as CC, the co-founder of Fave, answering questions from Nadir Ashafiq, the co-founder and managing director of The Lorry, and also Azarul Faizi, the founder and CEO of BatteryCoup.com. After listening to CC giving advice around strategies and implementation, I had one question to ask. CC, how do we know if we need to modify our long-term strategy given the influence of different micro and macro factors? How flexible should we be in changing up our strategy?
Yeah, Jeff. So for that area, right? So I think where we look at, like, should we modify our strategy or change strategy based on the micro and macro factors? So I think the way I look at it is that understanding at current situations, where we are, and should we adapt? And I think a lot of time the answer is not say must change or don't change. It's a lot of time is like, which aspect should we change? Which aspect should we not? How frequent should we review? So a lot of times, let's say example, even like, let's say we execute a commission scheme to the team. We actually put in a time to the team. How frequent should we review this? In what scenario should we review this? Right. So I think as we look at the macro factor, macro factors, so when we build up the strategy, is our assumption still intact or the assumption is today very off? Right. So let's say maybe even take as a whole, zoom out a lot, let's say at the country, Malaysia. Malaysia budget, what was assumption of oil price? If the oil price is now half, does it affect significantly the budget? If it does, then we need to maybe zoom out and say what need to shift. If it's like marginal shift, maybe not. So I think a lot of it, as we look into the factors, is that we want to be in the know, we want to be prepared, but not be panicked by it, right? Because things will change. Let's say right now with the coronavirus, every single day, things can get better or worse. And sometimes get better, and then next day could get worse, and then get better again. So all those things, and there'll be a lot of noises, a lot of rumors, a lot of wrong information. As a leader, how do we ensure that the decision we make is relevant and is based on the right input? Because if we just react purely, we could completely affect. And I think when we look at strategy and tactic, big picture strategy, unless this short-term effect is changing completely the landscape, we are no longer going to do this or that. If that's not the case, the likelihood of big strategy will still be there. Let's say for Faith, we are looking to transform the local offline businesses. That will still be there. But maybe the tactics, things that we're going to do for this month, this quarter, may have to shift based on the external factors. Maybe people now less going to bar to drinks. Maybe certain things have to shift. Maybe now people are ordering and do more takeaway or food delivery. What can we react to it? So what are the little things that shifting that we need to react to, and which are the things that is not? And I think as we gather all those things is, what are the significance of each data? Because a lot of times as we get the data is that, okay, this shift, that shift, a lot of people are motivated or maybe excited by the extremes. So let's say we talk about, maybe zoom out a bit, talk about things that, let's say you say safety of transportation. Whenever there's a plane crash, everyone felt that is very dangerous. But if you count on statistics, how many plane crash or how many flights, and divide through all the flights in the world, millions and millions of flights every day or every week, The statistics actually tell us logically that air travel's likelihood is actually safer than road transport. But because of recency and everything, may affect us. Maybe a few years ago, when I was still in Groupon, I still remember one of the team was telling us that a lot of business got shut down and affects then we don't hit the target. And it was so easy to, and people can quote two names, three names and say, oh, this was shut down. So that was a reason. But is that the real reason? So then I was looking with the team and say, hey, okay, how many businesses stopped working with us? So let's say at that time it's 40 businesses. They say, okay, give me the name of all the businesses that stopped working with us because they're shut down. And after they pull, it's actually 4. So it's 4 out of 40, which is 10% of effect. But because of the impact, that this is an easy excuse. This is an easy way to blame external factors. Right? Let's say right now, we are running a startups. It's so easy to go to investors or go to anyone, or team and everything, and say, we don't hit the target because coronavirus. That's the easiest way to blame, right? But is that really the case? How can we leverage on that and react and do something that benefit from it? What are the opportunities to that while not harming anyone? Because the last thing we want is also capitalize on a situation that do harm to people. So what's the message? And what's the really things that we believe in? And I think a lot of times when we look at all this kind of scenario, a lot of times I go back to asking our heart what we really believe, what we really stand for. What's the belief values that we embody? And a lot of times that goes to it. Let's say like a lot of times when our teams ask me, should we do A or B for our merchant or our customers? My answer is, if you are the customer or you're the merchant, what should be done to you? So let's say sometimes our teams ask me, this is gray area. Should I do this refund to the customer? So my question to my team is, will be, if you are the customer in this exact same situation, do you deserve this refund? If you think you are the customer and you deserve the refund, please give the refund to that customer. If you are the customer and you think you don't deserve refund, then ask yourself why you don't deserve and explain that to the customer. Right, and a lot of it is go back to our own core values to decide on this. Because I think generally most people come with good intention. And I think it's doing the right thing. So let's say treating, dealing with fraud as well. Right, a lot of people change a lot of measurements and things to protect the 0.5%, 1%, 2% of fraudster. But I think in a lot of time when we do that, we're actually affecting the 98, 99.5% of the genuine customers. So the key is, how do we be able to operate for majority of people, the genuine customers, and prevent the 1-2% of people from capitalizing it? So what decisions should we make? Because the last thing we want is inconvenience this bigger group. So the same thing, maybe look at our team. Sometimes let's say we have 10 people in the team. 2 top performers and 2 poor performers and the rest in the middle. Where do we spend our time? Do we spend our time talking, or maybe even with all the 2 poor performers? Or do we spend time with a top performers? Right? And a lot of times, most of the time, we end up spending most of the time with the poor performers, and that affects our emotion, feelings, and everything, right? And affects everything. But maybe we should think of, how do we spend enough time to solve that, but spend more time bring out the best of the rest, the 2 top performers and the remaining 6 average performers. So I think that's how I look at it. So I think macro and macro factors will change. What are the things is controllable to you? What are the things that's influenceable by you? And which are the things that you can't do anything? You have to accept it. And I think based on that, focus on control the controllable. Influence where it makes sense.
CC has truly inspired me today, and I hope he did inspire you as well. That was Chen Chaoyou, the co-founder and managing director of Fave, sharing his insights and advices to our entrepreneurs, Nadir Ashafiq of The Lorry and Azharul Faizi of BatteryCoup.com. Extraordinary Endeavor was made possible thanks to Endeavor Malaysia, a place where you can get access to mentorship, markets, capital and talent. For more information on Endeavor, visit endeavormalaysia.org or check out their Facebook and Instagram page. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and until next week, stay safe. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.